Hello, everyone. I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to the Art Scene Podcast. After a long hiatus, the podcast is back up and running again with a brand new episode. Today's guest is Isaac Vasquez Avila, a painter and sculptor based in San Francisco. I had the pleasure of visiting Isaac in his Bernal Heights studio to discuss his practice, his recent experience teaching, and to discuss his recent exhibition over at Part 2 Gallery in Oakland. Before I get into our conversation, here are some things in the Bay Area you should all check out. First, closing on June 25th over at the Institute of Contemporary Art San Francisco is Resting Our Eyes, an exhibition featuring 20 multi-generational Black artists whose work contend with the limitation and failures of the colonial gaze by casting Black women at the center of their visions through leisure and adornment. So check it out soon. Then at the Berkeley Art Museum, Amalia Mesa Baines, Archaeology of Memory, the first retrospective exhibition of the work of longtime Bay Area artist Amalia Mesa Baines, is on exhibit till August 13th. The exhibition features 60 works which celebrates Mesa Baines' important contribution as a Chicana artist to the field of contemporary art locally and globally. Be sure to check that out before it closes in August. And lastly, opening this weekend on June 24th at Part 2 Gallery, are multiple shows featuring the work of Musée Cissé, Alicia McCarthy, and Martha Shaw. All right, now here's my conversation with Isaac. Being here in Bernal Heights.
Yeah, Bernal Heights.
Yeah.
It's a little oasis out here.
Yeah.
I'm in the city. Feels very much like I'm in the city because Mission Street is just half a block away.
And,
yeah. But it also feels kind of suburban.
Yes.
And then a little like enclave of nobody really. I guess if you live in San Francisco, maybe you have more reason to come out here. But it's just like a little nook.
Yeah.
A little pocket of really old, like beautiful San Francisco houses and kind of old. Actually, San Francisco history, just thinking about my studio and where I'm at, you know?
Yeah. Are you originally from the Bay Area?
No, I'm actually, I was born in Mexico City. I was raised in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I feel like I grew up in San Francisco. Actually, this year, June 2nd of this year, actually was my 19 years in the city.
19 years?
19 years.
So, how long did you live in Salt Lake City for?
From 5 to 21.
Why Salt Lake City? What brought your family there?
Work.
Just work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my parents are, they migrated from Mexico to the United States, and mostly for work, and the reason that they arrived in Salt Lake is because my dad's niece, she had a job there cleaning houses.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, if you come here, I can get you a job. We can get you a job like immediately. And so I think when.
So it was mostly because the family was already there.
Like she was the one that took him there. There was a job opportunity, you know, doing, you know, whatever services. And he was like, all right, well, this is as good as anywhere else, because this is actually better than anywhere else because there's a guarantee there.
Yeah, for sure.
To support the family.
Yeah, I was wondering because like my family, my mother immigrated from Tijuana, and so like the easiest is like San Diego, so that's where I'm from. Yeah. But so I'm curious when like I hear about certain families make it to like a little bit further past where they just skip the Southwest.
It's weird,
and they
man.
Go all the way a little bit north to like past Nevada, and they go to Utah.
Yeah, and you know I can't imagine like the cultural shock they felt because my parents were really young. My dad had been here before. He actually got one of the times that he crossed the border illegally, he got busted and he got locked up for like 4 months, and then he got sent back over, came back, you know, was able to like, you know, be here for a little bit, went back, grabbed my mom, my brother, and you know, they had valid passports then.
That's right.
So that's how they kind of came to live here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird because they couldn't have picked like one of the more stranger kind of parts or a unique place in the United States kind of like landscape. Conservative state for the most part. Now it's changed a little bit. Salt Lake City's, you know, grown and the demographic is definitely changing. But when we were there, it was 1989, you know, so... Yeah. you know, capital of like birthplace of Mormonism, essentially. Like, that's the center of a very present, like in your face, religious environment, you know?
Yeah.
And that's interesting. I mean, I'm not Mormon,
right,
but I have a lot of friends who still are. And yeah, so it was interesting to kind of like grow up along that, alongside that.
Yeah. How did, overall, did you like your childhood there? I mean, you said,
yeah, it was
21.
A great, I mean, you know, it was, I don't know anything better, but I remember, you know, having everything that we needed. My parents like always worked, right?
Yeah.
We went to an elementary school and lived in a duplex for most of our lives. And my parents were renters. And eventually, like when I got into high school, they were able to somehow put a down payment on a house in Salt Lake City, Utah. And, you know, that was a long time ago. And because of that, now, you know, Utah, everyone's trying to move there. My dad was able to sell his house, retire, and move back to Mexico.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, the reasons for him having to go back are a little bit more complicated. But just the fact that he was able to do that.
Yeah.
It was a really kind of cool thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Because then you're like, I mean, you're living, in some ways I think about the American dream, you know, like that's why they came over here.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Not for them necessarily, but to give us whatever
it's
that
for the next
idea,
generation.
Whatever that idea is
that
lures people here, it was strong enough. It was a strong enough pull for them to be like, all right, we want to kind of offer this to our kids. And so like, just even thinking about them, my parents buying that house and like sort of in their own little way, living out almost this like playbook where it's, you know, the kids, the house, the dog,
right,
the picket fence kind right. of, you know, in a very, very modest way, you know, right. lower.
The good schools.
Yeah, like lower middle class, you know, but I went to community college for a little bit. Like, you know, they try to provide us like the best life that they could, which is fucking awesome, you know. Like,
what brought you out to the Bay Area eventually?
That's another complicated story, but I had met someone out here when I turned 21, and it was either going to it was gonna be Montana. My two options were this. It was like I knew I always wanted to leave Salt Lake because Salt Lake is very small. It's like there's bigger out there, you know. And
yeah.
I wanted that. And that summer or that spring, I had met some. I came out to San Francisco for the first time to visit a high school friend. And I had just graduated a few years earlier. And during that trip, I met someone that eventually, like, I moved out here for, and that's kind of, and I never like returned after that.
Yeah.
But it was either being a river guide in Montana for the summer, because I had a friend who was doing that, and I was like, fuck it, maybe I'll just go be a river guide, or San Francisco, and you know, there was definitely much more pull to make the latter decision.
Yeah. And what was the attraction of the city, you think, at that time?
I mean,
time?
It's funny because, like, I always wanted to, through pictures and, you know, even just, like, watching Full House all the time on Friday on
sure.
TGI,
yeah.
on TGIF on Fridays, and just, like, San Francisco was such a enigmatic place to me. So Full House, but also The Real World, like, one of the first seasons of The Real World
right.
with, like, Puck and all, like, the shots of, like, the camera going down Market Street and the sun setting. You know, there was so much to it. And back then, like, I was making artwork, but my knowledge of art was very, very limited, you know? Like, I didn't know about, I learned really about art when I moved to San Francisco. I was only in retrospect do I, you know, put things together and was like, oh, obviously in high school, I was always like drawing and doing little projects and this, that, and the other, but I never conceived it as a thing that you could actually like do for a living or as sure. as a thing, you know. But so, I was always interested
so
you, in.
So even as a kid in Salt Lake City, were you like always kind of an artistic-minded person then? Even
100%. You know, the like I was always really into like images and putting things together and working on the computer and like putting clip art together. And before I moved to San Francisco, I had a T-shirt company out there called Twy Clothing. The world is yours clothing. And, you know, so I was like selling shirt, like, you know, I was just doing, it was all like the art, you know, having a camera, taking photos, the early kind of stuff that, you know, kids like get into as a way just to kind of, I don't know, why are some people drawn to that and some not? But I guess to me at the very basic level was that the image was an image was powerful enough to convey an abstract or a really metaphorical idea.
Yeah.
Without text, without words. And I thought that was kind of like powerful, you know?
Yeah.
So my little logo for the T-shirts was just like this, that classic clip art globe, like three-dimensional globe.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I think about it now and it's really silly though, but it was called Twy and it was The World Is Yours Clothing. And it was because I used to love Scarface. Of course, you know, obviously right, it was like, right. though, you know, right. I just used to watch right. it all the time because I thought it was such a tragic movie, you know, but sure. also such a, on the other side of it too, just like the lure and temptation of making money in the U.S. and right. also that whole story, you know,
right. Right.
Cubans well, because, here.
Well, the root of it is like, he's just trying to get the American dream. It's just like, he was just trying all to get his, it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's, exactly. That's the whole so system, yeah, so right? he was such a tragic figure too, yeah. such a sad figure, and the irony of it all, like at, you know, the very end where they're, you know, the massacre happens and they're in their house and they're at the house and it's panning out and it's yeah. like there's blood everywhere and then you have the globe and the entrance and it's really I mean it's a ridiculous movie, but it's also I thought like cinematically was I don't know I was just drawn. You know, yeah. just drawn to it. I think my dad probably had something to do with that too. Showing yeah. us, you know, like.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
Okay, so then you're, so now you, what, how old are you by the time you, when you make it out here?
21.
So you're 21.
21, and I was going to, you know, community college trying to get a, you know, a BA.
You were able to transfer out here then?
I dropped out when I came out here. I dropped out. Like I went to City for a little bit, but it just wasn't work. I guess it just wasn't the right time for me. And I dropped out for until I was like 28.
Wow.
29.
Yeah.
I was, I had a friend who was much younger than me and, she was already graduate, you know, she was like years younger than me and she was one of those people who was like high school, college, done, career, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, she's like 8 years younger than me or something like that. Maybe 5 years. I don't know. I can't remember. But she's already so advanced in her career. And I'm still like, you know, bar back in and bartending. And I'm like, dude, I want to go back to school.
Right.
I need to do something with my life. Like, what do I go back to school for? And for me, school was always like, you go to school to learn about something that you want to learn. It wasn't ever like, you go to school to make money.
Right.
You know? And maybe that was like where I fucked up or something, or like, that's, I just never thought about school like that. I was like, well, the only thing I can think about going to school for is like Latino studies. And so that's what I went to school for, because also, I guess at that time I was really desperate for knowledge and kind of almost like an academic kind of knowledge about maybe what the Mexican experience or Latin American experience is here in the United States coming from Spanish-speaking country,
yeah.
Because you know I felt like I was in that weird limbo, like you know never hard to feel a sense of belonging that's or right. community, you know.
Because you said you were five when you came over, right?
Yeah. So yeah. it's like I'm growing up, and I don't know. I was born in a different country, and the only thing I know about that country is through the oral history.
Right.
The food, the language and the pictures that my parents show me, and maybe like some neighbors or some friends that through my parents that. Right.
Well, and also you like lived in Utah, so yeah. You weren't even like in a border city where you were close enough to like go visit easily, like across the border or something.
You know, and I was reading like Octavio Paz's Labyrinth of Solitude a lot, and like I was already, you know, searching out kind of these questions that and making art also though, you know. So I was like, art, and I knew I didn't really want to. I felt like I needed to learn about myself more before I pushed myself further in the art world, even if that just meant to get a BA.
Yeah.
And so I did. So I did that. Did my Latino studies. It was actually called Raza Studies back then at SF State. Met some really cool professors. Probably took this one class that basically like changed my life.
Which is basically their like version of Chicano studies, right? Yeah. It's like a historic. Historic program.
Yeah, and you learn, you know, and it's. I took some other classes. I didn't take any art classes, but I took like a film class and a history of San Francisco class, and I just wanted to get my BA. You know, it's just like because my mom too was always like, "You gotta graduate, you know, college, you know," and. My brother didn't graduate college, but he's doing really well, you know. And it's, but I felt like I had it was almost like a responsibility in some ways too. I was like, they came here for this was their kind of almost like dream or idea for us, and now that's weird that we're not kind of
doing it,
you know. So I was like, fuck it, I'll do it. This is what I want to learn. I did it. I got through it. Friends are artists during that time, you know. I'm making artwork. One of my really good friends, Terry Powers. He, I feel like he's influenced me actually quite a bit because he's the one that really showed me or talked to me about like fine art when I met him when I first moved here, because he had just graduated from RISD with a BA in painting.
Yeah.
And so when I met him, we got a job, weirdly enough, at the same bar. And when I met him, he would talk to me about like being a painter. And I'd be like, what'd you do? He just graduated college. I was like, what'd you get your degree in? Painting. And I was like, what?
Yeah, like that's
painting? Like you went to school for painting? No way, you know? And
he
showed me actually quite a bit. And I had some other friends, like, you know, this was like when I was graduating from San Francisco State University, who were getting into MFA programs.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is where I was getting to a spot where I wanted a bigger conversation about artwork, not my background,
right?
Or not being Mexican or Mexican American, or of course that has something to do with it, but like I wanted to talk about other people's art and how art can function beyond that, you know, because I was like, that's what I need. I was like, that's what I, this is what, it sounds like this is also something that I need from talking to my friends who are going through this experience. It's only making them better artists, because it's at the very least forcing you to think about things that you weren't thinking about before, about your own work and your own views and perspectives and all of that, you know, related to art and not. So it's like how you think in a lot of ways, right?
Right.
And so I finally, after I graduated with my BA at San Francisco State, I was like, I did some research, and I really liked Enrique Chagoya's work during that time. I loved his work.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not gonna, I don't have money to go to art school.
Yeah.
Also, you know, like, so I looked up what free programs were around Stanford, Berkeley, and I think at that time, like, UCLA and San Diego, I think.
Yeah, UCSD's program is free.
Or USD, that's what I
was. UCSD is free if you get into that program. Yeah.
But I was like, I'm not going to move out of San Francisco. So I decided to apply to the Berkeley art program. And then, you know, the more research I did, it was not only was it free, but, it, you know, I had this background in Latino Chicano studies.
Yeah.
I started noticing that a lot of the artists that I've been informed by as I do this have gone to UC Berkeley too, and that's where it kind of like took me educationally, at least.
Yeah. And once you got there, what did you feel? Because at one point when I got out of undergrad, so I had a similar background that my background was I was a history major.
Cool.
And what I wanted to study, I studied mostly California, like American Southwest history, but specifically like the Mexican and like the Spanish occupation of those lands.
Yeah.
And like, so a lot of like my background is like Chicano
cool.
and Mexican yeah, and Spanish cool. history yeah, and all yeah, that yeah. stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I got out of undergrad, but during undergrad, I really was into photography. Photography was my medium, and I always wanted to be like an artist and whatever. So when I got out of it, when I got out of undergrad, I was determined to get an MFA in photography. And so I was like studying and researching. And I remember one of the things I was, you know, had the same thing. How am I going to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
And I would research all these free programs, came to the same conclusion, Berkeley, San Diego. One of the things I learned about was that each program was also different. So I had friends would tell me like, oh, Lewis, your work is kind of conceptual. So if you go to Berkeley, Berkeley is not conceptual.
I heard that too.
They're more traditional. Like UCSD is conceptual. And like, you know, so depending on where you want to take your work, like you want to think about those things in this program. So I'm curious to know what your experience was when you did make it there.
So I guess the other part of, you know, wanting to go there too is that there's two additional things that I should mention is that they offered you also an opportunity to teach the second year.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And for me, that was huge because I was really interested in that at that time. And it's part of what I still do.
Yeah.
So you got, you know, on the job training, basically.
That's awesome.
So you would guide your, it was a foundationals course in the second year if you wanted. And they would pay you for it. An art class for the whole semester, foundations.
Wow.
Incoming freshmen, with mentorship, I can't remember the professor's, McNamara. That was his last name. He was the one he was our guide through the process. He would help us build a curriculum.
Yeah.
We would have meetings with him. He would about teaching and about maybe like our anxieties and about how are you going to teach this class? You know,
that's right. Yeah.
So that was huge for me. But the other part about it too was that I've never considered myself a traditional kind of artist. In the notion that I have, like a traditional artist, meaning like a classical painter.
Yeah.
But traditionalist in the sense that I like kind of basic materials. You
yeah.
know? Like
that's paint, and that's
like
what
painting
I mean. Yeah.
And you know, paper and like found objects. And the cool thing about Berkeley is that their whole thing is they have departments, right? They, you know, there's the painting, we have ceramics, sculpture, but it's an interdisciplinary program. So
yeah.
you come in there and it's people are interested in painting, in video, in more conceptual work, in ceramics. And, you know, it's a small staff and a small department, so they do what they can, and they try to get a broad, like a range of people who are teaching these classes that have experience, a broad kind of experience of art, which I think is also like really useful. And so it was, honestly, the first year was really hard because before that, I'd never been in a critique before either.
That's right.
You know, like, and I'm making these collages that are kind of aggressive, visually aggressive, you know, like, you know, body parts and cut up body parts and,
yeah,
you know, like really confrontational sort of stuff. I had no idea, like, I didn't even know how to, I remember that first critique was pretty hard because I didn't know how to respond or what to even like say, you know, I was just sitting there like, all these things came from my artwork, you know.
Yeah.
It was so disillusioned in some way. And but then, you know, that was like a 6 month period where you go through this like, I don't know if I I definitely don't belong here,
like
you know.
Imposter
like, yeah, I was like, I definitely don't, like, I don't know what I'm doing here, but I definitely don't belong here. And then after that you're like, oh, okay, well, to each his own kind of ever, you know, like you I became more, I was like, I belong, or not even belong, I deserve to be here as much as everyone else.
Yeah.
Not more, not
That's
less,
right.
but we all have like a foot on the table if we want it.
Yeah. So. Well, and then did you feel like you were able to figure out how to apply your own, I mean, your own way of doing, I mean, it
I
sounds.
Guess so, yeah, like, I don't know.
Like, what did you take from, like, because obviously you have this background, this Latino studies background, right? Was that something that eventually came to influence your work when you were in school or, like, guide you over there?
I guess.
Was that set aside, you think, and then you just had to focus on just the art when you were there?
I guess it was more of, like, I was thinking about it, I think, much more then in some ways. And now where I'm at, it's like I don't really think about it.
Yeah.
Because it's there.
Yeah.
Back then I was like, it's here.
Yeah.
It's here. And almost you sometimes like meaning like right here. Like,
yeah.
It's everywhere sort of. And I have to make that present or something like that.
Right.
And sometimes I used to feel like, pressure to represent the Mexican side of me in a very kind of literal sort of bold way. I have a good view for like my experience educationally was always good. Even I feel like when I think I had a positive experience regardless of some of like the challenges that I might have faced. And maybe insecurities while I was in school.
Yeah.
Because I think they do those moments after that critique, it forced me to think about other things that I hadn't considered before.
Right.
And from there, you can agree, you choose like
right.
what makes sense, what you would
right.
argue against, what you don't agree with, but maybe what you should also consider moving forward, you know?
Right.
And I thought that was... You know, like I couldn't have vocalized then.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, that's kind of like I think what it ultimately did for me. And then also just expands like, you know, the histories of people who have kind of done this also in for you too, you know. It's like that's when I first went to Berkeley, I had access to the libraries too, you know.
Yeah.
So the landscape design library right above me and architecture. Awesome. Yeah. You know, that's where I was, you know, learning about, and I got to go to Mexico City on a project while there paid for, you know, art, like look at murals, like finally get to see things that I had been interested in for a long time on someone else's dime, you know, and that's for me, I was like, that was huge, you know. It felt like kind of winning a lottery for me because I never in a million years would have thought that I would have gotten to experience something like that. Just as simple as like educating or graduating, you know, like
right.
graduating from college. It was just I didn't know it would ever kind of happen, and I was okay with that too, you know, if it didn't happen.
Right. So, all right, so you finished school, so it's a two-year program, right?
Two-year program.
So you finish up, so then what's next after you graduate?
Then it's like back to reality. You know, then it's like back to, that's I think the other thing that was so cool because it was like the first time you actually feel like you're an artist.
Yeah.
At least for me, I had my own like real studio.
Yeah, well, like what was the plan where you were like, okay, this I'm done, I'm no now plan. The goal is I want to get a studio and start making art? Like,
I wish, I mean...
Were like motivated, like you were just kind of like,
I've
I'm ready to.
I've always been like pretty self-motivated, you know, like at the end of the day, like you have to, I think you have to motivate yourself in a lot of ways. And luckily, one of the ways that I motivate myself is through like painting and making sculptures because I like it.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can be like hard to like get into it, but like I like doing it.
Yeah.
And so... There's more motivation to want to do it and to want to like make a new painting and like make a new sculpture or combine, you know, like see what comes out of this, you know. And but I had no real plan. My thing was like, all right, I'll have an MFA, maybe I can get into teaching, which, you know, it slowed down for me right after I graduated. I taught once at Berkeley, and then And then I think maybe another summer, I taught in the summer and then the following summer, and then I kind of slowed down. But teaching is very difficult, hard to get a job. Like, I don't know, I didn't know anyone. And it seemed that all my leads were either, it was kind of inaccessible in some ways. And, you know, the pay and adjunct and this, that, and the other, and, you know, your teaching history, which is not very much. And I just started bartending again. That's been my main thing up until before the pandemic, you know, when I finally, like, after, since I was 21 years old, since before then, actually, I've always worked in the service industry, always up until the end of 2019.
Okay.
That was when I kind of, like, you know, retired from being in the service industry, which was cool.
And then during that whole time, you're just still making art. Like, you're just doing stuff.
Yeah, dude, just doing stuff, like, work, you know, working artist as I still am, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah. So what kind of things are you doing up until, like, during that time, you're bartending, and then up until 2019? Because I feel like 2019 is kind of when in my opinion, this is where you came up on my radar.
Oh, cool.
Where you kind of started, like, popping up at, like, part two a little bit for me, and I started noticing your work.
Yeah.
But, like, you obviously been doing stuff prior to that.
Yeah.
So, like, what was that period of time for you? Like, what kind of work were you doing? Where were you showing? Like,
well, you know, getting little opportunities here and there, but mostly, you know, I was bartending, but it seemed like every year I was bartending a little bit less, because I kind of recognized also early on that if I give myself up, let's say, to the service industry or something like that and work the 5 days, I definitely won't have the time or energy to work on my own practice.
Yeah.
I could, for myself, I was like, I basically just say, like, this is done.
Yeah.
Because I can't, you know, like, the idea of working all day, then coming home, like some people have to do,
right,
and putting, like, a bunch of time and effort into their art practice in addition to taking care of the kids or your girlfriend or whatever else, it seems there's not enough time. And it seems like also a lot of pressure sometimes. But so I was always I have to, if I'm not going to be bartending, then I have to be, like, I'm going to be making artwork. And that's kind of how it was, and showing here and there, you know, at Incline Gallery, you know, with Guerrero Gallery, Right Window Gallery. My ex-business partner and I started a sign business in 2018, I think it was, painting signs and murals and which really kind of, that was a big kind of professional shift for me. But I had always, you know, wanted to and was doing very, not as much as I would have liked, but, like, kind of design work or painting, like a little mural for a restaurant through some designer friends that I had that knew that I wanted to do this kind of work. You know, they would throw me bones every now and then, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this, I want to be doing more of this, though, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I hadn't really figured it out, and I still really don't, you know. I feel like I piece a lot of things kind of together, as probably most artists do, to just kind of make it happen and support myself, you know?
Yeah. So now, right now, you're basically a full-time artist now, right?
I mean, I do. Part. So, like, I feel like I juggle, like, four things. So my art practice.
Sure.
Teaching.
Sure. So you still are able to teach them.
Yeah, I'm teaching. Yeah, so I started teaching again last year at CCA, foundations class through a professor that I got to know at Berkeley named Eric Skolin. And he reached out to me, and I'd been thinking about actually teaching, and I had reached out to Berkeley to, you know, see if there was any teaching opportunities. And he reached out to me, and he's like, do you want to teach a foundations course over there? And I said, sure. And, you know, teaching's awesome. It's being there last semester reminded me of the reward I feel like I get from talking to young artists about their ideas and watching people figure them out as time goes by.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, really, I don't know, it's really interesting to me, and I really enjoy it. And I consider myself more of a mentor than a teacher anyway, you know, like, so it's a whole nother thing, but that's kind of how I approach it, you know?
Yeah.
Foundations, first year in college, like, they want to be artists, like, what? You're going to do a lot. And it's more like process-based than actually, this is how you make a painting or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to share ideas with what materials and, like, why kind of questions?
Yeah.
So, teaching, my practice, sign, my own sign business, you know, where that I'm, you know, actually, like, working for a client. And then I do some scenic painting for Restoration Hardware.
Awesome.
So, you know, turning like faux, or taking models of like furniture or kind of decorative objects and making them look like something else, or, you know, like preserving moss and spraying moss with colorant so it looks fresh all the time. You know, like,
that's really cool.
Yeah, so I assist one of my buddies who actually is a, he's like a lead guy, scenic painter over there.
That's really cool.
So between all of that,
yeah,
that's kind of how I make it happen. And I always try to, like, you know, do maybe like 3 days, maybe more sometimes, like, of that, and then the rest of the time,
yeah,
I'm like making my work.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about your work itself, because I really do like your work. I think for me, the appeal for it to me at first was, like, I think the first series I think I saw was the Cielo's Gate.
Yeah, I think that was the first show. Yeah, that was the first show with Part Two.
Yeah, and, you know, I think for me the appeal is I like a good abstract, hard edge painting.
Yeah,
you know.
Me too.
And I think for me that was like the appeal for me. And then you have a sculptural element to your work too. So you have a mixture. You do paintings, you do sculptural work, and a lot of wood. You work with wood too, and found objects. But the interesting part about your work too is that each series you tend to do, you know, you do change it up a little bit. I mean, you still have the same.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of themes, but, you know, like the next series you did, which was like the Dear Dolores show, you still had some abstract work in there, but you had a little bit more figurative stuff in there too. And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about your work to me, because another thing I've seen written on a website where your work kind of combined cubism, Bay Area art, Chicanismo.
Yeah.
And so I wanted you to kind of, in your words, talk a little bit more about those things, because those are three very, like, you got a European, movement, you got a Bay Area movement, and you got a very, like, a Chicano movement, which is not necessarily a Bay Area movement, but it's, like, a very, like, Southwest, like, overall, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, where do I even kind of, it could be, sometimes I wish I was the other way, where I picked something.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, and I just, like, did it over and over again, and I stuck with that thing.
Yeah.
You know? And I have friends who are like that, and I really, like, admire them.
Sure.
You know, they're oil painters, and they do oil painting, and they have this kind of broad this broad kind of theme, but they, like, it seems like very kind of linear in some ways.
Sure.
And I really admire that. For me, it's a little... It seems like it's a little bit more kind of zigzaggy, less orderly for me. But part of the fun of it is also, like, trying to push myself to do something else.
Yeah.
And, like, being kind of curious about what the kind of next painting is going to look like, you know?
Yeah.
And figuring out some new things along the way. And also kind of like being aware of, or trying to be more aware, because I feel like sometimes I'm not, which I'm fine with, but like when I'm making work, also kind of stepping back and seeing like, oh, what is the what are these symbols now that I'm using, you know?
Yeah.
What are the, what's like the vernacular that I'm kind of pulling from through my reference sources? And, you know, whether it's like gates or like skulls or stars, or what are the things that are like repeating again, amorphous kind of like butterfly snake type of things. And just kind of also trying to be aware of that, because in, I feel like my method in making this stuff is more like I collect it, pull it in, and there's photos, and there's like, there's drawings, there's collage clippings, there's found material, there's letters. And then I kind of like sift through that and try to bring it together in one plane. Through like the paintings, I feel like my sculptures are much more like collage oriented in that sense, but I used to make collages, so it makes sense. That's kind of how I organize an image anyway, right? Because that's what collage is, right? You're pulling things together. But I think the thing about collage that I wanted to do to kind of like further it, for that I couldn't really figure out when I was making them, is to like get rid of the seam in some sense, this the actual seam of the material.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of like bring it whole.
Yeah.
And I feel, and painting was like a good way to flatten that out in some ways.
Yeah.
Mark Johnson, who is a studio neighbor, I asked him, you know, he has a long history in San Francisco and curating shows, and deep knowledge about Bay Area art. Really awesome dude. He used to run the gallery at San Francisco State University, studied with Joseph Albers, like so knowledgeable about shit. He was the one that I had a few conversations with him before the Dear Dolores, and I asked him if he would write the little, you know, brief to my, to the show, and through some conversations and him knowing me and knowing about my work, that's kind of what his take was, it, you know, and it kind of, and it does resonate because of cubism, obviously, Picasso.
Yeah. But, well, I think what's funny is, because earlier on I asked you when you were in grad school if there was anything from undergrad in your Latino studies experience that you feel like carried over, and that hearing you talk about how your process, mm-hmm. your work and your gathering of like clippings and information and things that you've read, and then your conversations with your neighbors and it seems like not even just him but other people and that have been in the city here for a long time, and it sounds like even your interactions with other people who have been in the city a long time, and you yourself have been here a little bit, and you seem to have a lot of interest in the history of the Bay too.
Yeah.
And it seems like really, I feel like what you've brought with you from your undergrad days is, I think that is when you, is your ability to take history and the gathering of knowledge and facts and bring that with you into your work, and I think you apply that to your work, because that's what it sounds like.
Yeah,
it's like,
it's
like, and I think that's even what your neighbor Marcus has seen, is that you kind of, it's like you're like a collector of history and a searcher of that knowledge, and even inherently, even how you described about how when you moved, even when you wanted to go back to school and you wanted to learn more about your culture and your background, and like, you know, like you seem to be somebody who just wants to like learn about things and know about things. And
I'd like to think, I mean, I think that's a big part of it, you know, like the motivation to learn.
You know,
like we were talking about motivation earlier, and I think, you know, I don't know if it sounds cheesy or not, but sometimes I don't want to think about my paintings. Like I just want to make a painting without thinking about it mm-hmm. too much.
Right.
And I can do the analytical kind of philosophical. I like thinking about it as I'm doing it, but I don't know. I don't want to overtake the act of painting itself, because I feel like the act of painting itself for me is much more free flow.
Yeah.
And experimental in that sense, in meaning that I want to like discover something in the act of doing it mm-hmm. and not necessarily like put something very direct down. And And I go back and, you know, I go back and forth with that. Like, how much information do you want to put? Like, how literal do you want to be about it? Through the text also, you know, how do you make the work more, like, personal? And there are ways that I do that. And me and actually Ryan Whelan and I, we were having this interesting conversation about opacity in people's work and how, and reference, and like how much you choose to share of that and how it reflects in the work, and just like how you control that and how you make the decisions why be more vague, why be more clear, when is a good time to do that, when is it a good time to not, out of just like the sense of mystery even.
Yeah.
Or somebody else's own, allowing somebody else to just like get lost in maybe the vortex of the image and allow them to kind of go on that visual sort of trip through their mind.
Yeah.
Through our paintings or our images that we make. And I think in some ways, like, that's really like where the art, some of the art comes into play too, you know, like the idea of that itself, like imagination. I don't know. So I guess that being said, some of like the, I think I was thinking about that in regards to like some of the texts that I use that is also, you know, obviously related to the professional work that I do, but also through the constant, so through messages in a lot of ways is kind of how I see it. And maybe even like the paintings too, like little messages, little reminders. My parents, especially my mom, she would have little sayings all over the house. Yeah. In my room, like this one right here, and I keep it right, you know, right on my desk, reach for the stars, cheesy kind of things.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they were really positive, they were really hopeful. And they were reminders to us and to the family of like what was some of the things that were important.
Yeah.
And some of that text is that, you know, they're like literal messages, you know, obscured maybe messages from that my parents used to write to me and still do. And my own that I write to myself. Actually, before you got here today, I was thinking about, I had written something down. Notes to myself to remind me of what's important, you know. But I don't know how much anybody needs to know. Like, sometimes I'm like, I don't need to share that. And sometimes I feel like I do. And how, I don't want to spell it out also. Like, how do I do it in a unique way in the work to like personalize it a little bit, or maybe even like think about what it is that I'm kind of trying to get at.
Yeah.
Through making work and painting and the process of it.
It feels like your whole journey has been like the search for more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even like how the way you talked about teaching, how you're teaching now, it seems like you even care about how your students learn. Like, it matters to you how you're going to teach them, because it matters to them, to you, how they learn. And it also sounds like there's a certain way, a certain experience you've had of how you've been taught that you didn't really like, because it didn't really help you. And it sounds like it's affecting how you want to teach.
I think that's a good point.
And so it matters.
Ways of learning, right?
Or yeah.
Ways we prioritize certain kinds of knowledge.
Yeah, or illustrate that.
Maybe that's a better way to do it. So like one of the things about, I recognized very early on teaching that students are coming here for the first time, right?
Yeah.
From out of state. And they're 18, 19, 20, let's say.
Yeah.
And this is their first experience in college. I don't know. Not that they don't know anything, but their brain is just, it's open.
Yeah.
And a lot of them just stick around their campus too.
That's right.
They don't go outside of it. So one of my big things personally is walking.
Yeah.
I always go back to this fucking idea of just like taking a walk. I like to think about it conceptually and like read about it. And I also like to think about it in parallel with my painting and kind of how I think. And what it does for me mentally and also physically, bodily. I think it's a good convergence of the mind and body.
Yeah.
These two things that are operating at the same time. One you don't know that it's operating, and one you kind of maybe know that it's operating.
Yeah.
You know, the mind kind of, but and then the body is also operating, but you don't even reckon, breathing, you don't even think about that. You know, it's just doing it. So how much of that how much of that is your brain all, like, doing that you don't even know, you know?
Yeah.
But one of the things about walking is that they get to, I take them out walking, and we do whole projects based on walking, you know, and I'm taking them everywhere, walking around everywhere. And some of them don't like it. We're walking, it's so far, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is the most walkable city in the U.S. Yeah. We're going to take advantage of it. And not only that, we're going to see a bunch of shit when we walk, too. Yeah. And we're going to get to know where you're making work and where you are in space.
That's right.
And in the city that you live in now. So I do care that they know that, because I live here and I feel like I have a lot invested in this city and I love this city, and it's taught me a lot. And so I feel like I want, not only do I want people to, who first come here, to respect that, but also so they can love it, let's say, as much the things about it that I still love about it and that have made me like want to stay here.
Yeah.
You know, the things that are, I think, like, important.
So what's coming up next for you? I know right now we're entering into the last week of the current show. Yep. You have over at the Part 2 Gallery.
Yes.
So what's next after that?
You know, I don't, I got a show at Part 2, a solo show at Part 2 in 2024 in February. So okay. I'm basically going to be, for the next, you know, whatever months, just working to towards that.
Yeah.
You know, I've already been thinking a lot about it. I've been getting warmed up, or kind of just continuing the circulation of my practice in all the ways that it works and its method, to just kind of jump into just a new new body of work,
right.
New sculptures, new paintings. I'm slowly scaling up. That's something that I've always thought about and wanted to do. And, you know, I make pretty modest size paintings in general, but I'm, you know, as I become more comfortable with things, and also I have a purpose, or I have a reason as to why I would want to make a larger work, or larger works, is not only is it to push myself. Well, a lot of it is to like push myself, and that's what I feel like I'm kind of jumping into, just like the idea of scale and what it means when something is bigger. Is it better? Is it not? Not even is it better? Is it not? But is it there's a lot around that I feel like I'm still digesting, but I'm really excited for, because it makes me paint a little differently. And I'm not kind of like hunched over,
yeah,
and cradling the work like a little baby. It's more, now I'm kind of like walking around it like a sculpture in some ways. So, you know, thinking about ways to push the work and work towards this goal with Part 2. I'm going to be teaching in the fall. And I'm just going to try to continue painting signs and murals, really, for myself and through the business, you know, as another kind of outlet, and which I really enjoy, you know, doing.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for coming on the podcast. No appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for today, everyone. Thanks again for listening, and thanks again for subscribing. If you liked the episode, please leave a comment or a review. You can also learn more about Isaac and his work by visiting his website at isaacvasquezavila.com or follow him on Instagram at @aliencitizen. Lastly, the intro and outro music is provided by Oceanside, California-based artist. Until next time, everyone.